Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's great to have you with us today. Coming up, Greg Pickle from PennLive.com and the Patriot News. We'll talk about Penn State football. Final half hour, Brendan Quinn from MLive.com to talk about Michigan football. Tomorrow, my brother reappears, along with our roundtable from our outstanding pool of announcers that will call the games on the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations on Friday night for high school football. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day, the outstanding Tom Hamilton as the Indians take her home.
Swung on, drill, deep right, Orlando going back toward the corner, slides, he didn't make the catch, it's a fair ball, it's a game winner into the corner, Chris will score, Geyer gets mobbed, out by short.
And another memorable game last night. As Brandon Geyer walk-off single to win, the Indians beat the Royals 2-1 last night. And the outstanding call of Tom Hamilton, whom we had on the show just about a month ago. Let's bring in Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and the Patriot News. First of all, Greg, welcome. Great to have you with us through three games. You know, what are you seeing pro and con in this Penn State football team to the stage?
Well, there's a couple things that jumps out from the non-conference slate. I think we've seen, despite some still being a little bit upset with the way the run blocking is going, I do think Penn State's offensive line has improved. It's in for its biggest test of the season. Against Michigan this Saturday, there's no question about that. But I do think there's some notable improvement there, and they're playing a little bit higher of a level than they did a year ago. So that's a plus. So obviously, the offense has been everything that most thought it would be and more. I think that Trace McSorley's the kind of guy that, well, you know, I think you might have to live with the turnovers, at least in the early part of the season, maybe a few more weeks. He's a guy that's pretty capable of finding open receivers and letting them go to work in space. He gets the ball there quickly with a nice bit of pace. So I think they're getting exactly what they thought they would from him, Saquon Barkley, and the receivers as well. Defensively, it's obviously been a struggle. Injury impacted. Experience has been a problem. But, you know, the one frustrating thing I would think for most would be the tackling is probably the one thing that jumps out. There's just a lot of leading with a shoulder or head, and it's really cost Penn State some yards that it didn't need to give up just based on that alone. They were in the right place. The play call was right, and there was just a lack of execution on the final stage of what they need to get a stop. So I think we'll see that get cleaned up here as we move forward. It's been a problem for a couple years now, but it's obviously something that needs to be fixed. So, you know, a good 3 weeks, 2-1, obviously, is something a lot of people saw coming. It was a good comeback for the Pittsburgh. Kent State and Temple are not really reflective of what Penn State will see in Big Ten play. So we have a lot to learn still about this team. But obviously, coming out of the non-conference slate, the biggest takeaway would be the injuries and then, of course, the way the offense has performed so far.
On the tackling, when you've watched other games, is this something that's germane to Penn State or is it an epidemic in the game itself?
No, it's definitely not contained just to Penn State. You know, it's a problem that they've had the last couple of years, but it's a problem that really college football has had. Everyone just seems to be thrilled with the idea, especially in the back end of the defense, to lay a shoulder on somebody and level them or just flat-out unwillingness to wrap up and make a tackle. You know, it's a problem across the board. There's no question about that. But you don't see, you know, the top-tier teams making too many or having too many missed tackles, rather. And for teams like Penn State, where the margin of error is thin from win to loss or blowing a team out and keeping a game close, you know, that's one of the areas where it needs to be better. But certainly it's across the board. You know, I think the disconnect being trying to tackle and stay healthy in practice and do it in a way that keeps everybody upright might be a little bit detrimental. But, of course, that's something that's a big focus now, health and concussions and all that. So it's a double-edged sword. There's probably more issues than just that. But it's certainly one thing that jumps out both for Penn State and across the country.
The injuries. Could they have survived 2 years ago, even last year, with the number of injuries they have? Or is this indicative that some depth has been built?
Oh, it's certainly indicative that some depth has been built. I mean, there were probably guys last year. I mean, obviously, Jake Cooper and Manny Bone were two guys that stepped up when needed a year ago. There were a couple other ones, and Penn State probably could have, you know, played a guy like a Ryan Buchholzer or Sharif Miller if needed. Obviously, it was good they didn't have to, but, yeah, it's tough. The one place Penn State couldn't afford really any injuries was at linebacker, and that's, of course, the one spot that's been hit hardest by him. Of course, you have a couple other positions, receiver, defensive end, corner, with the guys that have missed at least a game now. But obviously the biggest is at linebacker. And, man, you just really – I don't know back in the spring if anyone would have thought that the Troy Reader transfer would be such a big deal. I'm not sure if Penn State could have done it – excuse me, Steve – done anything to keep him. But it certainly would be nice to have a guy like that on your roster at this point. He's doing fairly well down at Delaware, playing with his brother Colby, which is something that was really important to him. So we'll see. I mean, I think the depth is good. But it's obviously there's one or two positions on this team where it's just not quite where it needs to be yet. And you could maybe say that about all of them, but a couple positions, linebacker being the biggest one, is just not there at all. So it's going to be an uphill battle. There's no question. I guess we'll see Cam Brown get involved, a true freshman, and Koa Farmer slides back down as well. So there's some options, but not a lot of them for Penn State there.
Brandon Smith, what did you think of what you saw from him Saturday?
You know, he's a great kid. I remember covering him when he was a wrestling, wrestling at State back when he was in high school. So he's a kid that just, obviously, is a kid you root for. He's a guy that, you know, did everything I think that was asked of him on Saturday against Temple. He called the defense well. He didn't never really seem to be out of position. He read, you know, everything that was coming at him pretty well. Really good downfield pursuit. You know, I think that he's the type of guy that, you know, you just got to put out there and see what happens. You know, it's tough to really get a great read on him just because we haven't seen him in the role that he was asked to play Saturday more than just on Saturday. So we'll see how if he's forced to play more or as much as he did against Temple, how he matches up for a full 60 minutes against a team that can really burn, you know, on the perimeter and on the edge. But, you know, I thought it was a very nice game for him. Obviously, the stat sheet and the tape show that as well. So we'll see how things played out. But it's a kid that, you know, obviously has earned his stripes to the walk-on and the type of guy that Penn State look for when they look for walk-ons late in the recruiting cycle. And they have a couple other guys like that on the roster, Carl Nassib also being another example from last year. So they're pretty good at that. But we'll see how things play out on Saturday.
What have you seen, Greg, in the growth of John Reed as a corner and as an impact player?
I think he's just sort of come into his own, which I know sounds cliche, but he's a guy that always had all the talent in the world, even dating back to high school, you know. Excuse me, Steve. The film is one thing that a lot of people sort of pick out, is that he watches a ton of film, and that certainly helps his play, but he's just reactive and instinctive. You know, you see that both when he plays corner and he gets a jump on routes, and you see it when he's returning punts and he sees things that are there before they're there that are going to be there. And that's why he's been able to have some success for Penn State. You know, he uses his speed and his quickness well, and he just sort of let the game come to him. You know, obviously at times last year he was a young guy and the game sort of came to him in a way that wasn't really what Penn State was looking for, but he's grown enough to, you know, take that, you know, when it comes to him, and instead of turning it into a negative, turns it into a positive. So obviously everyone's been really pleased with him, and the ability for him to play as a number one corner and then to also slide in the nickel duty is really important. I think it's a flexibility that a lot of teams maybe don't have, but Penn State has it with him, and that he gets them the ability to use their depth at corner, which is quite good with Christian Campbell and Imani Oriwari, among others. So very good start to the season for John Reed.
Trace McSorley, obviously a common question, Greg, but what kind of feel does he have for the game based on what you've seen so far?
Oh, yeah, it's a very good one. Again, you know, I think that, you know, the things that in the negative department people are always going to pick out are the turnovers, and they haven't been great. Some have been on him. Some have been on his teammates that, you know, are maybe wrongly credited to him. But at the end of the day, you know, he has an ability to feel a pass rush coming and get away from it, and he's smart about how he throws the ball away too. It's something Penn State just didn't have with Christian Hackenberg more often than not. So I think that in and of itself is, you know, we talked about the offensive line play earlier in this segment. I think that has as much to do with it as anything, is that when things break down, down when things aren't how they're supposed to be. He's proven capable more often than not to get away from it, throw it away, get out of the pocket and run, do the little things that help, you know, Penn State's offensive line, when it is overwhelmed, keep him upright. So, you know, we talk about the strip sack and the interceptions, and, you know, those things aren't ideal, but his feel for the game is pretty darn good for a guy that's, you know, still probably learning a new offense along with the rest of his teammates and obviously playing more snaps than he ever has before at the college level.
Well, I mean, no question, you know, that he's done some really strong things so far. Do we talk enough about Chris Godwin?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he was, again, obviously there was, you know, his coming out party, so to speak, against Temple, where he really was a big part of the game plan and caught everything that came his way. I mean, I think he's, you know, arguably, this isn't going to come as a surprise, but one of Penn State's best players. You know, he makes plays that when you need a guy, you know, when this offense is functioning and it needs to make a play, I don't know who other than Saquon Barkley you would turn to besides Chris Godwin on offense. I think he's that good of a player. You know, even when the stats don't show up, he's a guy that teams have to game plan for and maybe put their best corner on. And I'm real excited to see the matchup between him and Jordan Lewis this weekend, assuming the All-American corner from Michigan plays. It sounds like that's going to be the case. And you're talking about all Big Ten versus all Big Ten type of talent. So it'll be a good test for Penn State, obviously on offense as a whole, but also for Godwin. Because I think he's probably going to be a pretty good part of Penn State's game plan along with Tayshaun Hamilton.
Greg, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much.
Thank you, Steve.
That's Greg Pickle, PennLive.com, and the Patriot News. We'll come back with more in a moment. Final half hour by Brendan Quinn, who covers Michigan for NLive.com, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. To have you with us on what is a beautiful Wednesday. Could we have nicer weather than this? This is, maybe it's a little warm. I know it's going to cool down a little bit, but you know what? I looked out last night. I was standing out there at the practice field and looking up just at the sky a couple times and saying to myself, look how beautiful it is here.
Looks like we are going to be in the clear through Sunday. Yeah, we have lucked out too, at least every Friday night for high school football so far.
Yeah, that's great. You know what? It's great. It's going to cool down. I think Friday's a little cooler, right, Sean? It's a little cooler on Friday?
Not Friday. We're still calling for highs here in the Valley, mid-80s. Cooler Saturday. Ooh. Looking
okay.
73 Saturday and maybe stuck in the 60s on Sunday. But at least the last couple of mornings, we've had the foggy mornings and sunny afternoons. So that is definitely the prelude to fall.
Oh, there's nothing like the deep blue sky snap, a little bit of dew on the grass. Get to a Friday night, cools down a little bit on a Friday night. Suddenly that halushki tastes a little bit better, doesn't it?
Yeah, and getting into the conference portion of the schedule now. Now we're talking.
Now, are you a halushki guy? Because I know Buhner is. And pretty much, I mean, the suit is like everything at the concession stand is
just kind of a basic hot dog hamburger.
Yeah, me too.
I'm kind of a plain guy. I'm just your plain meat and potatoes, keep it simple kind of guy.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's what I am. I'll be honest, I've never had halushki.
Neither have I. No.
Never have.
No.
So.
It's kind of like driving down through the coal region. If you've never had soupy, then you kind of get the eye.
Never had that either. Never have had that either. But. One of these days, you and I should go to a Danville game sometime and just sit on the other side, right, and just videotape and then play it back at the office, at the company office party. Just to do that. I mean, that's what, I'm telling you, it's a great idea. I mean, look, Lawrence would love it.
I think there's a lot of people in this building that would love it. I
mean, just a little videotape, right? Yeah, you know, and then youngster doesn't get in. He gets all freaked out. He then starts announcing the game in the stands.
I'll be willing to be the guy holding the number one purple finger.
Well, sure. I mean, whatever color works for you.
I figured I had at least one of Danville colors represent.
That'd be fine. And I'll wear the fake glasses with the mustache. It'll be great. Nobody will know it. It's us.
Yep.
We'll be sitting on the other side, and then we'll be using a zoom lens.
I was going to say you, me, and Buhner, but it's like, no, we better get Buhner out of the picture if we want to stay incognito.
No, we can take Buhner. We can take Buhner and wear one of those hats. Nobody notice. You know, maybe we'll get him to wear like the purple and white hair, you know? That would be fun. So, speaking of fun, we mentioned earlier, Vince. Yeah, you know, think about this, Vin Scully. Every area has their own guy, so to speak. Harry Callis. Now, to this day in class, remember, I'm dealing with 22-year-olds. It's a 400-level class, so they won't be 18 or 19. So I'm dealing with 20, 21, 22-year-olds. Now, Harry passed away in, what, 2009? April 2009?
Yeah, after they won the World Series, yes.
Yeah. So
it was that opening day.
He's been gone now for 7 years. So some of these people were 13 when he passed away.
Yeah, it seems like yesterday.
Right? He's revered. Harry, Whitey Ashburn, Merrill Reese, Gene Hart, Mike Lang, Bill Hillgrove, Myron Cope, Jack Fleming, Fran Fischer, George Paterno, Jack Brickhouse in Chicago, Harry Carey, Jack Buck, Gene Elston, Chuck Thompson, Bill O'Donnell, Red Barber, Mel Allen, Phil Rizzuto, Ned Martin, Dave Niehaus in Seattle,
Lindsey Nelson,
Bob Murphy, Ralph Kiner, John Miller, Hank Greenwald, Lon Simmons, Ted Leitner, Milo Hamilton, Ernie Harwell. Okay. Reading Kurt Smith's book the other day. Ernie Harwell. When they tore down Tiger Stadium, they asked him if he wanted a memento. You know what he took? The visiting clubhouse urinal. I asked him why. He said, think of all the great players that have gone to the bathroom in that urinal. He says, I'm going to take it home and I'm going to use it as a planter for my wife. Are you kidding? True story. But these are the voices that especially, and is it a bygone era? I suppose to a point it is a bygone era. But, you know, because not every game was on TV like today. Dick and Milton would know. He listened to a lot of these games. Probably listened to Chuck Thompson and Bill O'Donnell himself.
Yes, and you missed Bob Prince.
Well, I mean, I wasn't done with my list yet, but
okay,
yeah.
I didn't call about that.
Yeah.
I didn't get to listen to yesterday, and I only listened to the last this section and the last. And I was just kind of curious going into Michigan this week and going into the Big Ten schedule. And, I mean, I see the spreads. It's a lot. And I guess my thing is from your friends around Penn State or State College or Penn State, do they get any consensus for this team this year or not? I don't mean what they think should happen. I mean what they actually feel is going on with the team. Does that make sense to you, the question?
I think I've got it. In other words, what's the general feel about where they are as a program?
After three games a couple games here.
I think the general consensus I'm getting, Dick, is that they really like the offense a lot.
Yeah.
They think McSorley's done a really good job, that they have good receivers. Gesicki's been better. Barkley's Barkley. That the offensive line is not great, but it's better than last year. And that defensively, they just have so many injuries that you know, it's testing the depth to the limits there, and that the special teams are better. That's about the general consensus I get from everybody.
I guess what it is taking the situation where we're at. Do they feel that we can compete fairly well within the Big Ten now? Because that's the really most important thing on the schedule, the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to what I've said. It's speaking engagements. And I think I've said this on the show, but it's worth repeating, that I really thought the time based on the timetable of return for the program, you know, and aging. I've always said 2017 to me was a big year. And that this year kind of sets the table for it. I mean, take, for example, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. He stepped into, to be honest with you, Dick, a great situation. Because Brady Hoke had recruited really, really well. And now, to Harbaugh's credit, he too has then added in the Garys and guys like that where he's recruited well. But even a guy like Jabril Peppers, he didn't recruit him. But he's done a great job of organizing and coaching them. So he stepped into a full boat of talent and no rebuilding where James Franklin's had to rebuild.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I kind of agree. I appreciate it. I just didn't hear the analysis after Monday's review, and I didn't even hear all of that. So,
yeah, I just think that, Dick, that the hard part is that the road back just takes longer than people realize, and it's something I've kind of realized since day one, but that's because I've seen it. But it's like trying to convey it every single week. It sounds like an excuse.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You know, if the... Dick mentioned Bob Prince. How about Herb Carneal and Minnesota? How about Red Barber? I don't know. I think I mentioned Red Barber and Mel Allen together, I think. Milo Hamilton. Milo was not beloved in Pittsburgh, but in Houston they loved him. And Bob Prince was followed by Lanny Fitzgerald, and Lanny did the games longer than Bob Prince did. The Possum, Jim Woods. Rosie Rosewell. Great names. And, of course, our own beloved Fran Fischer. John Ward at Tennessee. Kaywood Ledford at Kentucky. Dick Enberg. Kirk Gowdy. Well.
What was the Georgia football announcer? Larry Munson?
Larry Munson.
Yes.
Never met him. I haven't met the current Georgia announcers either. Their door was locked. I was like, what that like to say? How you doing? Couldn't get in. Like, okay, fine, we'll just retreat back to our own little cubbyhole. Think about this at Michigan. Bob Eufer, 37 years. Frank Beckman. Now, I never met Bob Eufer. Frank Beckman, obviously, I met several times. And all the respect I have for him, what a great guy Frank is. I mean, 30-plus years. That's 67 years, two guys. Now, Vin, of course, is one guy, 67 years. But two guys, 67 years. It's amazing. Amazing. Don Fisher at Indiana, 40-plus years. How about that? Ray Christensen did Minnesota football and basketball 51 years and was the nicest guy on the planet. I mean, seriously. What a gentleman Ray was. A gentle soul. And then we're going to have Mike Grimmer on the show next week, and Grimmer is just a perfect guy to replace him because Mike's all class. And we got Johnny Holiday coming on in 2 weeks. I mean, come on, Johnny's done Maryland forever. Johnny's a legend who then has the gall to tell other people that the other people are legends, and Johnny's a legend. But always remember, you're never a legend in your own house.
I know I'm not.
All right, time now for the sports bozo of the day. Whatever sick individuals are sending death threats to Colin Kaepernick, I mean, really. You don't agree with what he's doing, you don't agree with what he's doing. You can also ignore him. you'd be amazed how ineffective a protest is when you ignore it. But death threats, come on. All right, someone who's never going to make that list, ever, ever, is Brendan Quinn, MLive.com. Quinny, how are you? Great to hear you.
I was going to say, should I read between the lines here that I'm following that segment?
No, you should not. You're all good. By the way, we'll start with this. I'll make sure DJ knows you said hi. So,
Dick absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Dick Girardi, one of the greats. All right. We see the numbers they put up, and they're awe-inspiring. As they played, have they played awe-inspiring?
The first two games were better than the third. We'll put it that way. Colorado was a little bit better, but Michigan didn't do itself any favors. I think against the better team, you know, the big takeaway was if Michigan plays the way it did against Colorado, against Michigan State, or Ohio State, you know, the two primary games that everyone has circled on the schedule, but that's in addition to at Iowa and Wisconsin. You know, they would lose that game. They would very well lose that game if they played the way they did against Colorado. The first two games, I mean, they just lit up Hawaii and Central Florida, didn't get much competition. But there were some warts. There were some warts last weekend. And there are some defensive issues that people are starting to kind of get a little uncomfortable about, that being some stuff in the secondary. They've been without Jordan Lewis, who's an All-American, but he might be back this week. But you know, they just kind of get torn up down the middle of the field. Safeties were very much an issue last week. And then offensively, you know, they still have a quarterback who's playing his fourth game this weekend. So they have been spectacularly solid. Is probably the safe play here, but they also have perhaps the weakest non-conference schedule of any national title contender that you can name.
Let's get to the offense, because it looks to me, in watching the tape, a lot of teams have sold out to keep Michigan from running the ball, which then brings me to Wilton Spate. So Moore's been thrown on him. How has he handled it?
Well, UCF in week two just decided to pack the box. And right. I think it was a situation where they knew they had no chance. So just eliminate that one thing and make Wilton Spate beat him. And he did. You know, the thing about Spate is he has the greatest luxury, and that is talent, to throw to. Amar Darbo and J.U. Chesson are both all Big Ten caliber wide receivers.
Oh, yeah.
Jake Butt is perhaps the best tight end in the country. So, yeah, I mean, Spate is 6'6". He can throw over the line. He has a big, strong arm. He can move well in the pocket. He feels pressure fairly well. And he has talent. Last week, he was susceptible to, I think he got knocked around a little bit early, and it took him a good while to kind of get into any flow. So, you know, after three games, there's only so many things that you can kind of, stigmas you can put on a guy. But, you know, maybe if you get up in his face early, that's a way to rattle a young guy. But, you know, he responded fairly well in the second half against Colorado, moved really well, and found a big third down pickup late in the game, made his best play of the game late. which was maybe pretty telling as well. So I think people are still kind of feeling him out. Everyone wants to see him in a big game at this point. You know, that's the thing. He had the luxury of 3 week non-conference games to at least get his legs under him, and now things get real.
I've only seen Peppers play once in person because 2 years ago he did not play in the game out at Michigan. He was hurt at the time. You see him a lot. What makes him special?
He's pretty amazing to watch. He is something else. He's one of those guys that you just kind of find your eyes gravitating to because he is so big and strong and fast. I mean, he's just a flat out NFL player running around a college football field. That's the only way to put it. He can do darn near everything out there, and they ask him to. He will return kicks. I don't think at this point it's advisable to kick at him because the other teams have learned that that's a bad idea so far. The only real knock on him right now is that he doesn't. He hasn't been intercepting passes in his career as a member of the secondary. But Michigan moves him around defensively so much. He'll be on the line. He'll be lined up just off the ends. He'll be in the secondary. He'll drop back. He'll blitz. He'll rush. He'll do everything. So he's kind of one of those, you know, what do you do? What do you do with that as an offensive coordinator? He has people worried, and then he takes the field on offense. At tailback, at wildcat, they can line him up to catch passes. He's an issue. He's an issue for anybody. And as an onlooker, though, he is a talent to watch. He is someone who is entertaining, and he knows it, and he kind of carries himself that way.
I know Dan Dierdorf was talking to Jack Hamm and me before last year's Penn State game here, and they said, look, he says, I think Peppers is the best tailback on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be amazing considering they've got 3 decent tailbacks back there.
Yeah. I mean, if he could play every snap, they would play him every snap, put it that way. The only reason I've been saying that they might as well because they have him this year. I can't imagine he's back for another season. You know, put him out there. I would use every drop in that tank, but and I think that's something that you might see later in the year when you get into those Michigan State, Ohio State, at Iowa,
sure,
those games. They might not have the option because they don't have a lot of, you know, they have some talent in that backfield. They don't really have home run hitters in that backfield. And Peppers is a guy, you know, last year when they played Michigan State, they sent him in at running back, and Michigan State took 2 straight timeouts to figure out exactly what they were going to do. That's just the kind of guy. He just kind of makes coaches weak in the knees.
Penn State played Boston College in the Pinstripe Bowl, so I saw a lot of BC tape, and then obviously the game itself. And Don Brown, mm-hmm. Don Brown with that group just loved to blitz. I mean, he unleashed the hounds. Has he had to blitz as much at Michigan because of the play of the front four?
Yeah, they're probably still blitzing in some way, shape, or form on about 80-85% of their snaps. It's a variety. It's not. I don't know if it's. I didn't see that much of his BC stuff, but it is not as much. I don't think it's as much, you know, all out warfare style blitzing. You know, they do have some help on even with Lewis out, they still have 2 decent corners in Jeremy Clark and Channing Stribling. So I don't know if they've had to go kind of all in as much as he did at BC, but they've been solid, and that front four makes life a little bit easier on everyone. I mean, they got, even with some other injuries on the line with Monet and Taco Charlton's been out, they're still defense, you know, they're still NFL talent up there. Chris Warmley and this Rashawn Gary is getting better by the week. He has to be one of the best freshmen in the country. Yeah, they're going to blitz it. They're going to send it. It will look similar to what Penn State experienced last year. They are not shy, and they kind of take on his identity of being a fiery guy and all that stuff. But they've also had some issues. You know, they replaced their entire linebacker group,
yes,
from last year, and there are some issues there. They had some trouble last week for sure.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Look, we know Peppers returning can be dynamic, so it's got to be factored in. How well has Michigan, though, kicked the ball?
Not well. Kenny Allen is a guy that they were kind of banking on. They went all in on him. asking him to do all aspects of the game, kickoffs, punts, and field goals and extra points. And he's struggling a little bit. Missed, I believe, two last week. I might be wrong on that. But I know he missed at least one last week, and he's kind of just been shaky all year long. It's definitely an issue here. People are wondering if Quinn Nordin, who everyone there is certainly familiar with, could start to get a shot soon here. How long does Kenny Allen's leash? I can't imagine it's that long. So that could be something that shows itself in this game. It'll be interesting to see, but that's definitely an area they're looking to score touchdowns. I think anything from 30 yards out, they'd be a little wary.
Yeah, I understand. What do you think of Gary so far? As a, you know, he was the number one rated guy coming out. What have you thought about him so far?
You know, when it's lineman, I kind of say, all right, you know, let's actually see him
right,
you know, line up in the trenches in some of these games. And he was the number one ranked player for a reason. He's really, really good, man.
Right.
He is so fast. He's one of those guys that he gets an arm under a tackle, and he's so much faster than him. If he just gets an inch of leverage with that arm, he's by you. He's so much faster than anyone he will line up against. And at times, they'll put Gary on the end and put Peppers directly behind him. So, you know, if you're a quarterback and you're looking at that, I don't, you know, what are you thinking? Or if you're a running back who has to pick up a rusher on that side of the line, you're like, well, both of these guys are faster than me. It creates some problems. But Gary is special. Gary, he is very much the real deal.
How much of this football team is the one Brady Hoke recruited versus how big a slice is the part Jim Harbaugh's recruited?
There's a lot of experienced talent on this team, and that is that was built by Brady Hoke. Your Jake Butts, your Jordan Lewis's, your Chris Wormley's, Taco Charlton, you know, these big time names that they have, Jay Uchetson, Amara Darbo.
Even Peppers.
Absolutely. Most of the offensive line, that's Brady Hoke. Now, would he be doing this with this team? I don't know about that. But it is certainly the product of that staff. And it's actually kind of going to be an issue for next year because they are replacing just loads of positions, like basically the entire offensive line, nearly the entire defensive line, almost the entire secondary. You know, there's going to be some problems with that. And as a result of that, Jim Harbaugh's played, I believe, 20 freshmen so far
right, this
year. Now, not as reliant as Penn State is on young guys, but at this point, I think that they've been playing so many because they know they have to. They're not going to have a choice when it comes to next year and you're looking at this roster.
Give me, Urban Meyer did a great job of going into Bowling Green, taking somebody else's talent, winning. He went to Utah, took somebody else's talent, including Alex Smith, whom he did not recruit, and win.
Mm-hmm.
He won a national championship his second year at Florida. Same story. He didn't recruit those guys, but they won. And then he goes to Ohio State, and now he's been there long enough where now the whole thing is his. What kind of job has Jim Harbaugh done, for the most part, taking somebody else's talent and it matures, but also organizing it in such a way?
I literally would say every aspect has been changed. It is top to bottom, organizationally, day to day, practice wise, skill instruction, the staff. I mean, Brady Hoke, everywhere he went on his climb to Michigan, He basically brought his entire staff from San Diego State, which was the same staff that he had when he was in the MAC, brought the whole thing along. Jim Harbaugh came in here and basically hired whoever was the best available at every position group. You know, there's a distinct difference there. And I think it has shown itself most dramatically in skill development because Brady Hoke and his recruiting, that was never a question. They brought in good classes each year under him. And there was clearly talent here. when they were just bumbling around and the program was being, it just had no actual identity of itself. And I think between Jim Harbaugh coming in and teaching these guys to look at themselves differently, and then bringing in a staff that top to bottom is, as you know, one of the best in the country, that shows itself in every way, shape, and form. But a lot of it was getting these guys to believe again, because no one here, you know, in the debacle that was Brady's last year with Shane Morris concussion, with all the stuff around Dave Brandon, the athletic director, everyone kind of lost sight, I think, of who they were and, you know, and how talented they could be. There was a reason last year's turnaround was what it was. It was basically the same team.
Right. Brandon, what about dealing with him? Is he different? Is he different now than when he began, or is it the same? How is it now for those of you who have to be around every day as to how to deal with this, not deal with that? How do you deal?
Well, he very much is in his own orbit, and everyone from the beat writers who are there every day to national guys, to fans, to everything, it's what you see is what you get. He basically talks to reporters here on Mondays, and that's it. You know, he'll do his little radio show for about 20 minutes, and that's about it. They're dealing with him is more dealing with the reaction around him. That's the real challenge, I think, with not only covering the team, but for some fans of Michigan, that this guy is so polarizing that everything he does is turned into a radio discussion, you know, as far as the SEC country, and it's on ESPN, everything he does. And that's more the backfire. I don't think any of that even really gets to the forefront of his mind. I'm sure. I think he's aware of every last thing. I don't think he particularly cares about it, though. And if anything, probably gets a little kick out of it. So he is entirely his own entity here.
What does he respond to really well, where you feel like you get an excellent answer, and what doesn't he respond to?
If you ask him to compare anything, you know, this quarterback to the guy who was there last year, or this team to the team from 2 years ago, or coaching in the NFL to coaching in college, anything that is drawing a comparison, he shuts down immediately. He refuses to do it. You know, he looks at everything as its own deal, and he will not draw parallels at all. What does he respond to? I mean, frankly, sometimes it's depends on which guy walks in the room. Sometimes he will have a little smile and he'll be ready to expand and he'll joke around. He'll be a little self-deprecating. He will make some jokes. Another time it is just shutdown mode. He has zero interest in expanding. He has zero interest in being there. And that's that. Now, you and I have dealt with plenty of coaches who are that way.
Sure.
The thing about Harbaugh is that everyone's a psychologist when it comes to Harbaugh. Everyone wants to figure out what is happening in this man's mind, because he is so far off and so much more unique, and he's so interesting because he's so successful, and no one can exactly figure out what makes him tick. You know, plenty of great profile writers have tried and taken decent stabs at it, but Nick Baumgartner, our beat writer here, has talked to people who have known Harbaugh his whole life, and they'll say, like, I have no idea what's going on in that man's mind. So, you know, if you can figure him out, I'm all ears. But
because I've kind of
as a basketball guy who I could kind of help out on football, you know, it's kind of an onlooker. Yeah. I find it fascinating. I find it completely fascinating.
I think he's part. There's part Parcells in him, there's part Belichick in him, and there's part Dos Equis, most interesting man in the world in him.
Too. Right.
Like all those at once.
Hey. Right. And if you wanted to ask him, you know, people have tried to get him to explain himself, and he seems to think it's normal. You know, He's having a press conference on Monday, and he starts talking about his wife's visit to the OBGYN, and everyone's kind of looking at each other like, man, I'm pretty sure you're not supposed to talk about this in public. I can't imagine your wife would like to be mentioning her doctor by name in your Monday press conference. And he just, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He's just rolling along telling his story.
Oh, man. We're all pawns in the passion play. All right.
But it's all right, though, because then the light switch, you know, the light switch goes and basketball starts, and I'll go hang out with John Beilein, who
is about as normal as normal gets.
You couldn't possibly get two more polar opposite people to be sharing office space across one parking lot from each other. It's amazing.
John Beilein is about as down to earth gets, and he'll talk to you about anything.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.